Fair enough. David, I've got another question from Dick Nichols. He makes his own compost. It says, I can make compost in bulk once a year. Okay, how would I manage a worm farm to utilise a compost stockpile annually for applications on my paddocks from May through to September? So basically, I think what he's trying to say, if he's got, or if any farmer has got ready-made compost, how would that fit in with a worm farm? Where would worms fit into a ready-made compost to make a vermicompost?
Yeah, here you go. Is Vic on the line? So there's a couple of questions I'd like to clarify before I answer that.
Look, okay. What I'll do is I'll bring everyone on the line now, and then if he is on the line, we can have a chat. Just have a chat. Just half a sec.
Yes, Dick Nichols here.
Yeah, how are you going?
Dick, fire away.
Yeah, good. Good, thank you.
Right, sorry, isn't it? Yeah, Dick, what are you making your compost out of?
Sheep manure, hay, straw, the council's chipped up trees over the last years, and I've put quite a bit of wood chip in there as well.
Yeah, that's okay. Sorry?
That'd be the main stuff, isn't it?
Yep. It's got, okay, I wouldn't like to have any more than 10% wood chips because they break down a lot slower. I mean, I guess it depends on how you're going to actually apply the compost, if you can get it out and the wood chips that aren't broken down, I suppose they'll eventually break down in your paddock, but I'd still feel more comfortable if there was a maximum of 10% wood chips. Now, what type of volume have you got? Are we talking about trailer loads, truck loads? How much are you talking about?
Yes, it'd probably be 8 to 10 cubic metres.
Yeah, okay. Probably what I would be looking at doing is putting that some of that material in a windrow about the size of what a hay windrow would look in the paddock just after you've raked and it's still fluffed up. So we're talking about no more than a metre wide and probably half a metre high. Is that making sense?
Yes, yep.
Okay. With that long type of windrow, then you can put your worms in at one end of the windrow and they will fairly efficiently move along the windrow so that you're able to access finished product on a fairly regular basis. You might want to perhaps cover the windrow, or you need to monitor the moisture so that it doesn't dry out too much. But by having it in a long, narrow thing, you're going to have the worms move along it and be able to keep taking from the rear end as they finish with it. Whereas if you just put your worms into it in one big heap, they're virtually going to have to process the whole lot before you can start the extraction. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yep.
And David, would Dick have to cover it up with some sort of material to protect from the sun, or is it any protection needed?
Not necessarily. The compost in itself sort of will provide some. In the winter I put more pasture hay over the top, which actually when it rains then starts to compost and create a bit of heat, so it actually raises the temperature in the bed by 3 or 4 degrees and just makes it a bit more comfortable. The ideal temperature for compost worms is about 25 degrees. During the winter, that's not all that easy to achieve, but if you can move it from 12 degrees up to 17 or 18 degrees, then it's obviously a lot more comfortable than just sitting there at 12. I don't bother protecting my windrows during the winter, but having said that, quite a while since you've had a really wet winter. But so long as your windrow is on an area where the excess rain will run away and not just form pools where the bottom 2 or 3 inches of your windrow became waterlogged, then that would be a problem. But if provided you've got reasonable drainage where your windrows are, I wouldn't worry about it. Though at the same time, if you want to throw a bit of straw or old dirty old lucerne hay or whatever on top of the protection from the sun, that's also going to break down and it's also going to breed more fungi, so it's going to give you a better product. So there is some advantages having a sort of a some sort of hay material over your compost. Over.
David, is there a need to keep the moisture at a certain level in the summer months?
Yes, it is. The ideal moisture level for the worms is if you pick up a handful of the bedding and you can get 2 or 3 drops squeezed out of it when you squeeze it in your fist, that is ideal. If you can't get any moisture, then you've got it a bit dry, and if it just squelches out, then it's obviously too wet. Over.
Right, further questions for David? Anyone?
Yes, David, it's Alan Wood.
Alan, could you just, well, just before we move on to your question, just getting back to Dick, or to anyone else that's listening, the issue of keeping your worms moist in the summer can be quite a problem, especially if water's an issue. So it's another reason why if you have your worms in a concentrated area moving through a long, thin line, then you really only have to keep the particular area where the worms are at the moisture level. Whereas if you have them in a heap spread out over the whole heap, you've virtually got to apply enough water to keep the whole heap moist, and that can be quite a big issue. So the concept of the long, narrow line has a number of advantages. Okay, Alan.
David, I'm interested in the timber frame sort of breeding worms, sort of just using household scraps and probably some chook manure out of the chook house. What is the best book to probably refer to?
Good question. And without a doubt, my Bible is a book called Organic Growing with Worms. It's written by David Murphy, an Australian guy who actually lived in Maryborough, not that far from me. I think it retails. You can get it in Book City. Well, I've got it here in front of me. Book City, it cost me $35. So it may be a little bit more these days. I doubt it. That's my Bible. And he not only uses his own experience, but he provides the scientific data and experiments to back up what he's saying. And I think by far, I'd say to anybody that wants to go into breeding and farming worms, that would be the best book to buy. Over.
David, can you give me the name, that title again, please?
Yes, it's called Organic Growing with Worms. The subtitle is A Handbook for a Better Environment. So Organic Growing with Worms, the author, David Murphy, and it's published by Penguin Viking. And I do know that most Book City, because I've referred a number of people to this, and they usually have no trouble getting it. I know people up in Queensland are able to go in and buy it up there. So it's fairly well distributed. And obviously, if they don't have it, those Book City and people like that will get it in for you. Over.
Yeah, more questions, Alan. What do you want? What else would you like?
Transferring worms from one of those boxes to the other box. Would you do it manually, or would just put the box so close that when they finish with one, they'd move to the other, or let one dry out and then have the other moist and be so close that they would transfer?
Compost worms, Ellen, are top feeders, so once your first box was full, you would find that 80 to 90% of your worms are in the top 6 inches of your material. So I'd simply take that top 6 inches in and put it in the bottom of the next one and then start building up again from there. With the 80% of the material that is left, I would give it a few weeks for the remaining worms and the biology in it to sort of finish off whatever's there. You could possibly even put a small layer of fresh manure back on top of the 80%, and you would find a lot of the stragglers would then come up into that pretty quickly, because that's fresh, it's far more tasty for them than the old stuff. So you could once again harvest that 2 or 3 inches. And then with the remaining 80%, what I would do would be to take it out with a fork, and when you've got, say, half a barrel load of it, I'd put that on a black plastic garbage bag out in the sun, make your heap into a pyramid shape. The worms that are in that will move away from the light, so they're moving towards the middle, so you then just scrape the outer inch or so of the heap away, give it half an hour, come back, scrape again. So eventually you would finish with just this tiny little cluster, or maybe a big cluster, of worms at the centre of the pile, and that way you would not have lost a single worm. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does, David. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's excellent information, because we are low in fungal numbers in the paddock, and if we've got the raw materials, why not use it to our benefit?
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, this is what, you know, we wonder why isn't this information out there for people, because there's so much, most of what we've got is already at our fingertips, and it's only a matter of getting a little bit of knowledge and then starting to do it. And I guess what we're doing through my Worm Growers Association and through Farming Secrets is making the vehicle, the opportunity available that, you know, the information's there amongst other people, and we can network, and there's no reason why we can't all be doing it. Over.
David,
yes,
a very important thing, Alan, I just want to butt in that you just mentioned the Worm Growers Association. Can you give the title of that so it's clear, and how do people join that association? Because I think why not get expert input on a practical basis, like we've been getting on the phone just now. So can you introduce the Australian Worm Growers?
Yes, the proper, full name is the Australian Worm Growers Association Vermiculture Incorporated. But if you just Google in Australian Worm Growers Association, our website will come up, and there's details there with my name and phone number and other people. And if people want to join us, then probably the best thing is to contact me, and I can send them out the relevant application forms. But Australian Worm Growers Association, Google that in or Yahoo and you'll search, and you'll find it. Will come up at the top of your list. Over.
And David, the current fee was $100, wasn't it?
Yes, it's $100 in the first year, the $10 joining fee, and then after that, it's $100. But it does, like, we've got members in Western Australia, Queensland, Tasmania, Victoria is by far where the most interest is at the moment. Most of the original members were involved with supplying compost worms to the supermarkets for the city household worm farms, but there's a growing number of people now, like the people we've got online at the moment, are starting to realise the potential for this in agriculture. And because of the breeding situation, if a farmer decides to start farming worms for his own fertiliser, he's going to get to the stage fairly quickly when he has an excess number of worms for what he needs to make the fertiliser of his farm, and then he also then has the potential to offload his excess worms to other markets through the Worm Growers Association. And I can see in the future as more and more councils and shires have to do more about their waste disposal, that the demand for worms in the waste disposal industry is going to become quite large as well. Over.
David, we've got about 6 or so minutes left, and I just invite anyone online to ask you questions. So can we fire some questions at David?
Yeah, if there's anyone else got questions, go ahead. The information on the design of that box, is that on the website, David? And also, why is the are there a large gap in the base of the box? Why does one side not filled in down the bottom? Why is that?
Yes, that's because that's where you access, you put your raw material in the top and you access the finished vermicast from the bottom. So there's a sliding flap that goes along, that slides in and out. So you pull out the slap that's about 150 mil, 6 inches wide, so that you can access the finished material from the bottom with a garden fork, or preferably a fork or a spade, or scrape it out from the bottom. So that's so that you can get the material out without having to tip the box over. The design of the box is featured in that book that I told you, David Merson. That's where I got it from. I've modified it to make it a little easier to make, because I'm basically making about 10 a week at the moment and selling them. Instead of using the tech screws, as is recommended in the book, which are fairly expensive, probably not that much expensive if you're just making one, but I just use twisted roofing nails. That's just the twisted roofing nails, and that holds the treated pine together quite well, and we make sure that we buy treated pine that doesn't have the arsenic in it. Over.
Dick, are you happy with what David has said to you? Is there anything else you want to say?
Yes, you've got me excited. I feel like buying some worms today and making those little windrows. I'll probably I imagine if we start the process, it'll become obvious just where the worms are along that windrow. I guess you just poke your hand in and see where they are, do you? And assume that everything behind them's been done, and everything forward is future food.
Yes, you'll just be able to just scratch the surface and you'll see them straight away. They're there in huge numbers. What the other thing, don't worry about it if they've moved along and haven't eaten 100% of the material. Once they've moved along, what they've left behind will be just teeming with biology, and you can manipulate their progress. For instance, if you wanted to keep them within in a particular meter area, if you covered the area behind and in front so that it didn't get the moisture, then they would congregate in the meter that was exposed to the moisture. So by manipulating the moisture, you can manipulate where they are. But obviously, if you allow them to stay too long in an area where they've basically eaten out, well, then, like other animals, they sense there's not enough food, they're going to slow down their reproduction, they're going to shrivel in size, virtually hibernate for survival purposes. So the idea is to keep an eye on your windrow, and once you'll clearly see it'll change from raw straw and material and manure into quite dark, sweet-smelling, crumbly soil, and you'll know that, you know, you've be quite excited about what you're getting out of that.
Then I've got a quick question for you. Once Dick has made his vermicompost, how does he store it? How long will it last?
That's a good question. I have found that I have put some virtual vermicast that's been pretty well processed in a hay shed over the summer, and 9 months later I checked it and was still 80% moisture content. So it holds its moisture content very well, therefore it will hold its biological or its microbial content very well. The literature says probably don't hold it any more than 12 months, though you will find that as it becomes finer and more of the raw food has been eaten, that you're losing your fungal content, which quite important. So I would tend to get it out on the paddocks as soon as possible, providing that the conditions are right. I don't see any sense of putting it out in the middle of summer and just letting the sun beat away on it. But any time from autumn, once the the soil's moist, so the microbes can go out of the vermicompost into the soil. So or if you've got irrigation, that expands your window of opportunity, I suppose. But getting it out, making sure that the conditions are right, or that there's a, if it's on pasture, that there's a good grass cover and good root density underneath, so they've got plenty of food to go into, I'd get it out there as quickly as possible. But it is, I mean, it's not urgent. You've got to, I would have no problem if it was 3 to 6 months old, but once you start to get in a year, 2 years, then you'll just observe that it becomes finer and finer, and which is an indication of higher bacteria and less fungal content. Over.
Now, that product, you're just talking about a vermicast, which you would, a vermicast compost, which you would be spreading out, but that same material can be kept for, like, say, 6 or 12 months or longer, and it's be liquefied, can't it?
It can, but once again, if you liquefy it after 12 months, you're not going to get the same fungal content in... I mean, theoretically, there should still be fungal spores in it, but I know from feedback from Darren Morgan when I originally supplied him with some older vermicast, which to me looked beautiful stuff because it's so fine, he was disappointed in the amount of fungi in the mix, and Darren's the guy that's doing the Dupatoli's organic vineyards. So I then sent him down a much coarser version of the vermicompost. Initially he said, oh, this is junky, there's so much rubbish in it, but what he then found was that it also had really high concentrations of fungi. So I liken it a bit to, you can't buy live fish without having water. You can't just buy the fish. So, you know, you can't get the fungi unless you've got the right sort of bedding with it. So you have to put up with the stuff being a bit coarser and therefore maybe having, you know, more problems with your straining the material. But as I say, I just put it in a bucket and cause turbulence with a shovel, and then just strain the material off from the top. So it's not really a problem. Over.
Yep. Dick, Nolan, we are going to be closing off soon, so is there anything else you'd like to ask David?
Yeah, David, obviously you're not measuring dissolved oxygen levels in your tank.
Good point. No, I haven't. I don't see the need for it because what I have found from, as I said earlier, from some of my customers that have taken away and left it sitting in the shed or on the shelf for a couple of weeks, that had to have become, all the oxygen had to have been used up by then, and yet they're still getting very good benefits from it. I've now probably, over the 18 months, would have at least sold to 500 different customers, and I can honestly say that I've never had one person come back and complain and say, look, that stuff damaged my plants or it didn't work or whatever. So and yet if you listen to Elaine and her importance on the oxygen level, well, she's talking about the risk of anaerobic bacteria forming and, you know, the nasties and the bad forming. But if you've got the worm element in there, they've already knocked out the bad ones or created the environment where they won't work. They won't proliferate either with or without oxygen. That's my understanding of that at the moment. But good question.
Yeah, sounds terrific. David, what's the cost of those boxes?
Sorry, say that again.
What is the cost of your boxes, sort of in kit form?
We retail them at the farmer's market for $120 with 2,000 worms. Now, if you buy 2,000 worms at Bunnings, that's going to cost you close to $90 anyway. So they're really good value. Though it costs me, now that I'm making them in mass production, it costs me about $30 in material. But there's no reason why you couldn't get together three or four or old pallets that are, you know, outside factories being dumped and make a similar sort of a enclosure that would hold your compost. You need to be aware that the beauty of compost worms is they will not run away. You don't have to have an enclosure that prevents them from getting away. So long as they've got food and moisture and the environment is at the right temperature, they're happy to stay there. So you don't need a fancy setup to start breeding up your worms. And many people just breed them up in old bathtubs and things like that. The problem with that is that you've got to get the finished product out from underneath. But you know,
we'll have to wind up now. We've run out of time. So I'd like to thank you very much for coming on the line, because what you have to say is extremely useful, and when put into action, it's going to be very, very profitable for farmers to use what you've come up with. And also would suggest that farmers join the Australian Worm Growers Association, whatever you said it was, get the right terminology. So it's a goodbye from me, and thank you very much, David.
Okay, thanks, Hugo. Thanks to the guys that called in, and don't be afraid to give us a call if you need more information. Bye.
Okay. Thank you.
Fantastic.
Thank you.